This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Xiao Ning and Chuang. It is now 7:37 in the morning, and in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill where Lin Mark speaks to Dato Sri Chia Cheng Hai, co-chairman of Value Partners. And I do believe you have something in common with him, right, Chuang?
Yeah, he is someone that I resonate with quite well because he and I, not to say we know each other, and not to say he knows me from Adam, right? But he's from Penang, former journalist.
The motherland.
The motherland, the epicenter of the entire universe, right? He was a journalist. He worked at the Star. In fact, he started out bundling newspapers back in the day. Poor family, right? Obviously, had to go to work very young. And then I think he went through the ranks, joined Reuters, I think eventually. Then went to Hong Kong. So obviously, he from there turned into an analyst, and then he went into fund management. And he's basically built a multi-billion Hong Kong dollar market cap company investing in value stocks.
So listen to this, because he's known as the Warren Buffett of Asia. But meanwhile, we are also staying in Hong Kong because the Hong Kong government announced that it was postponing the September parliamentary elections by a year due to rising COVID-19 infections. Now, the opposition has questioned whether health concerns are the real reason for this delay. And so far, 12 pro-democracy candidates have been disqualified from seeking re-election, four of which are sitting legislators.
And some of the 12 include the very, very, very prominent activist Joshua Wong, very, very young, in his 20s. He's been featured on the front page of the Financial Times as well as another person named Gwyneth Ho, former journalist. Both were front runners in this unofficial Democratic primary held in July. So on top of this disqualification, there's mass discontent as well over this new national security law imposed by Beijing.
Yeah, so the series of bold and aggressive moves by the state, seemingly pro-Beijing's establishment, has received harsh reactions from countries like the US, UK and the EU. But Beijing, together with its chief executive Carrie Lam, seem to be unfazed. Now, to peg the political ramifications this will have on Hong Kong, we have on the line with us this morning Boon Negara, consultant on Asia security and strategy. Thanks for joining us this morning. Now, what are your views on Hong Kong chief executive Carrie Lam announcement to delay elections by 1 year?
Well, I think in terms of the election results, it wouldn't make much of a difference because Hong Kong society is so polarized that people who have their preferred candidates in mind wouldn't probably change their minds anyway with the postponement. And of course, the Hong Kong government is strictly within its rights to postpone it. Some would say, this would be highly irregular. The Hong Kong Bar Association, for example, is not too much in favor. But I think, if you look at the countries that have scheduled elections during this COVID period, more have postponed than not postponed.
Were there sufficient grounds in the first place, though, Boon, for them to be delaying elections in the first place?
Well, yes, I think when you look at the situation in Hong Kong, the spread of the COVID cases have spiked repeatedly for several days now. And Hong Kong being a very small and crowded place, the effects of the spread becoming worse with an election at this time would be far greater than in other places.
Yeah, but there were issues that Carrie Lam in the first place didn't even seek the recommendations of the health officials in Hong Kong, right? So it seemed like she didn't really consider the stakeholders involved. Is that true?
Well, I'm not sure about whether she did or not, but the decision is for the chief executive herself to make. And I think the medical evidence of the spread is quite well-founded and is quite well-known. So the details of the spread and so on, are quite secondary when you look at the figures, which are already quite undisputed.
Yeah, so Boon, there are discussions for this caretaker legislature to stay in charge once the term of the LACO, the Legislative Council, ends at the end of next month. Can you help explain why there are concerns about this?
Well, as I said, the situation in Hong Kong is so polarized now for some time, as you know, that anything such as a postponement of the elections will throw up all kinds of arguments and claims. It's very partisan. And depending on which side you're on which side the people you talk to are on, you have quite different answers. So a postponement would be opposed by those who oppose the government, because the postponement is a decision by the government. So just about anything decided by the government of Hong Kong will be opposed by the opposition. So I think, you know, they have their own narratives. But I think we look at the actual effects of a postponement. Those who have reason to be against the government or government parties and individuals will have more reason to do so, and their supporters as well. So it's not going to work in favour of the government with their postponement.
And Boon, like you say, right, Hong Kong is extremely polarised. Is there any way to address this and to perhaps bridge that gap?
There are ways, but it takes a long time. This is a serious divide. You know, the divisions in Hong Kong society are multiple and multi-sectoral. It's not just intergenerational, it's also inter-occupational, inter-class. And, you know, for example, I think the main grievance centers around inequality in the economic domain, not just in terms of incomes, but also in terms of the lack of career advancement and development. A number of these areas are policy-related, and which, surprisingly, the Hong Kong government as well as the mainland government has failed to address for years, for decades, in fact. So you have all this upsurge of opposition which takes different forms. And the most obvious form is to oppose the figures in government and the parties in government. And, you know, of course, you know, the mainland gets drawn into it. Well, it is also partly responsible in not helping the Hong Kong legislators, the Hong Kong Executive Council and so on to develop a greater economic opportunities for the young people in particular.
Yeah. Also, Boon, this criticism against Beijing over Hong Kong and its tightening grip has increased globally. Everybody's up in arms about it. The UK, the US, Japan. Is there a chance Beijing will pull back on this pressure on Hong Kong?
Very unlikely. I mean, you know, the problem is that there's a lot of misunderstanding internationally, and partly because of the kinds of biased portrayals of the Western media. So we get the issue centering around democracy or rights, and so, which is actually the message and the narratives of the protesters, right? And not necessarily opposition, because opposition legislators on the whole are, you know, quite responsible people. And they have been there for many years and decades. So the thing is, the opposition being led in terms of narratives by the protesters who are not necessarily democratic themselves. Because when you look at, for example, groups like Demosisto, which has now been disbanded, they are not in favor of institutional democracy as we understand it. They are in favor of street activism, of taking things to, you know, direct action on the streets, a series of demonstrations, rather than institutional processes. So when it comes to that, of course, internationally, the Western countries, and mainly the Western countries in this international scenario, that oppose the Hong Kong government and China on this matter. So, we get the situation where the whole thing is skewed. A lot of the issues are relating to Hong Kong's laws, essentially the basic law, and then now the new national security law, which many commentators in the West do not understand because they have not read the laws. There are 160 articles in the basic law, which has been in operation for decades and accepted fully by the rest of the world, including Britain. And there are 66 articles in the new national security law, which none of them, including the Western media, has read, apparently.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Boon Ngara, consultant on Asia security and strategy, reminding us once again how polarized Hong Kong society has become. And it's not just a protest about national security law. Actually, it shows the deep divide between society in terms of economic privileges. And I think there's lots of concern among the young people in terms of unemployment and their ability to even afford any property in the first place. Right?
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of overgeneralization, this could well be a divide that's drawn along wealth lines and affluence lines. If you are rich and you've made it in Hong Kong, it's probably because you've been doing business with the powers that be, and you don't want the status quo to be disturbed.
Yeah, but also I want to point out the irony in that, you know, the US has made a protest against the delay in elections, but hey, what does Trump want?
Well, exactly, right? So pot meets kettle, kettle meet pot.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, as usual in politics, nothing is ever quite the same. But moving in about 50, well, stay tuned. We have some messages after this story.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.